All right, friends, it's HoopBall promo time. This is big because this is our 2020-2021 NBA season product rollout, and I am so excited to tell you about what we've got. We almost never push our HoopBall products, but this is the window of the year where we need to power that engine. So let me tell you what's out. We've got our draft guide, our flagship shining beacon to the most comprehensive draft guide in fantasy. We cover all over 400 players this season with future access pass to our Brewski 150. Now, if you don't know what the Brewski 150 is, I'm here to give you the need-to-know info. This is the fantasy draft list that has beaten every other list for 10 straight years. And new this year for HoopBall, we're unveiling our monthly membership plans featuring our fantasy pass, draft guide, Brewski 150, our new DFS pass, premium in-season tools, as well as our wager pass for sports bettors. Everything you need, we've got you covered. 365 around the clock, HoopBall Tools is your one-stop shop for your NBA treasure trove of fantasy need-to-know information. All that you need and more, check us out. Head to hoop-ball.com or follow at HoopBallFantasy on Twitter now. Check it out, give us a follow, get your tools, and win your league. All right, friends, it's HoopBall promo time. This is big because this is our 2020-2021 NBA season product rollout, and I am so excited to tell you about what we've got. We almost never push our HoopBall products, but this is the window of the year where we need to power that engine. So let me tell you what's out. We've got our draft guide, our flagship shining beacon to the most comprehensive draft guide in fantasy. We cover all over 400 players this season with future access pass to our Brewski 150. Now, if you don't know what the Brewski 150 is, I'm here to give you the need-to-know info. This is the fantasy draft list that has beaten every other list for 10 straight years. And new this year for HoopBall, we're unveiling our monthly membership plans featuring our fantasy pass, draft guide, Brewski 150, our new DFS pass, premium in-season tools, as well as our wager pass for sports bettors. Everything you need, we've got you covered. 365 around the clock, HoopBall Tools is your one-stop shop for your NBA treasure trove of fantasy need-to-know information. All that you need and more, check us out. Head to hoop-ball.com or follow at HoopBallFantasy on Twitter now. Check it out, give us a follow, get your tools, and win your league.
The following is a HoopBall presentation.
Welcome to the Thursday night edition of the Box Score Breakdown, a hoop-ball.com presentation. I am your host, Alan Sroki, flying solo in this pod tonight. Our usual co-host, David Bracey, was unfortunately unable to join us. He's feeling a little under the weather, and that's just how that goes. So get well soon, buddy. We'll look forward to having you on the show next week. For now, you guys are stuck with me. Let's see how this goes. So coming up on tonight's program, we have a four-game slate that we're going to break down for you guys here. We had a fun one in Boston, the Philadelphia 76ers beating the Boston Celtics 115-109. We had a surprise overtime loss in San Antonio, Cleveland Cavaliers taking down the Spurs 117-109 in OT. We had a game played in Mexico City for the NBA's unveiling of their latest G League team, Dallas Mavericks, beat the Detroit Pistons 122-111. And we have a game going on in Denver as we speak, as we record. Portland Trailblazers versus the Denver Nuggets. We will have a result for that one towards the end of our show. But before we jump right in to the proceedings here, I got to give a shout out to our favorite title sponsor, Hawaiian Isles Kona Coffee. Guys, can you hear that sound? That right there is the sound of satisfaction. The exact feeling that a cup of Hawaiian Isles Kona Coffee gives you, which I can now say because I have tried it. It is fantastic, guys. Wonderful stuff. It is the perfect stocking stuffer for your holiday season. You know, so you had to parse over that one. It was a little bit of a tongue twister for me. But yeah, it's the holidays. I know for a fact that you guys, at least let's call it half of you listening, have not done your Christmas shopping yet. We're less than 2 weeks away. For our Jewish listeners, also about less than 2 weeks away is the first night of Hanukkah. You guys have 8 nights of presents that you need to figure out. I got a great idea for you. Hawaiian Isles, Kona coffee, boom. Now you only have 7 days to think to figure out. It's that easy. These guys are great guys. You can check them out at their website, HawaiianIsles.com. You can search them up on Amazon. Just go look up Hawaiian Isles Kona Coffee, and you can find them on Twitter at H-I Kona Coffee. That is H-I-K-O-N-A Coffee. Hawaiian Isles. Get yourself a cup today. So let's get ourselves situated with the first game of the night. The first TNT game, the Boston Celtics losing by 6 to the Philadelphia 76ers. We'll start with the Philly side. Joel Embiid had a ginormous game. 38 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists, a block, 2 threes. He shot 12 of 21 from the floor, 12 of 14 from the line. A just par the course, monstrous game from the man himself. Tobias Harris had a great game. He had 23 points, 8 rebounds and 7 assists. Pretty surprising triple-double, but triple-double-ish sort of line from Harris. You'll take those assists all day. He had a steal and 2 blocks as well. 10 of 20 shooting from the floor. Ben Simmons, a little bit quiet. He had 7 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists, 5 turnovers, and a block. No threes taken in this one, so prepare yourself to celebrate for whenever that next one will happen. Josh Richardson's a guy that's very interesting right now. He's coming back from his hamstring injury. He played 26 minutes tonight. He's apparently on a minutes limit. Either it's undisclosed what that limit is, or I'm just, you know, I missed that, but whatever the case, he played 26 minutes tonight, which is a solid output, and he had a good game. 14 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, 2 three-pointers, 1 turnover, 2 of 2 from the free throw line, 5-11 from the field. That is pretty great Josh Richardson stuff right there. You love the counting, stats. He was a buy-low guy before the injury. The injury reopened that buy-low window for him, and if you were able to snag him, good on you. He has a very optimistic outlook moving forward. Al Horford was out of he did not play in this game. He was listed questionable during the day with a knee and hamstring soreness, I believe in his left leg. It was the first that we heard of this injury. There was no record of it until today. And it's unclear how serious it is. I mean, obviously, you don't want soreness in either of those two places, no less both at the same time, so I think that the Sixers are taking the right cautious approach here. We saw him warming up, though, before the game. I'm no doctor. Maybe he's going to miss one. Maybe he'll miss two, but I don't think he'll be missing many. Mike Scott got the fill-in start for him. He played 29 minutes and had 15 points, 4 rebounds, all 3-pointers, 5 of 7 from the floor and from the 3. He was hitting them wide open all night. The Celtics were not defending him. They were not giving him much respect. And if Mike Scott is capable of doing one thing very well, it is spacing the floor. And he did. He was pretty great. But he's not the guy that I'm really interested in talking about with the Sixers squad. The guy that is definitely the most interesting is Matisse Thybulle. He was a guy who really started to pick up his shooting when Josh Richardson went down, and it was at first built out of necessity because, as we've mentioned on this program before, and as many others have, and several others, the Sixers bench is nothing. They have no bench. It's a starting five team, and we've been questioning when we're going to see someone else with value sort of appear, and Matisse Thybulle is doing some interesting stuff right now. In this ball game, he played 30 minutes, and at the first glance, the line's not that great. He had 6 points, 2 assists. He had a steal and 2 blocks, which is what you should have him for, and he had 2 three-pointers. Now, that's the key. Thybulle closed this game out, and Al Horford wasn't there. Had he been there, you know, maybe you see him. But at the same time, Thybulle's been really stroking the three-ball pretty well recently. Over his last 9 games, which was basically, this time frame that I'm looking at here, it incorporates when Richardson went down, all the games that he missed since, and then the 2 games since he's come back. In those 9 games, Thybulle has been playing at a top 40 clip in 9-cat, with a huge boon to your defensive stats, decent boon to your threes. He's been averaging 2 threes a game. But the thing that's crazy is he's shooting 60% from the floor, and he's not killing you from the free throw line. I mean, it's not great, but he's not taking many, so it doesn't really matter. And the turnovers are really, really low, too. Here's why any of this matters. The Sixers, they, like I said, they closed this game with Thybul, and they had him taking shots. He took some three-pointers. They were trusting him to take them. I think he might have actually hit one in the fourth quarter, though I might be wrong, so don't quote me on that. But the point being is that he was out there, and it made a lot of sense against the Celtics team, which is basically comprised of all these wing guys. The Sixers need to be able to go small, and Thybul kind of fell out of the rotation because he wasn't able to hit any of his shots. The defense is like already at an elite level. If he is really able to start seeing minutes in the mid-20s, there's fantasy value there. I'm not quite sure what it is. It's not going to be top 40. I mean, it's just not. But there is a world, I think, where Thybul could play his way into a mid-20s role while Josh Richardson sees like low 30s. And, you know, you just flip the minutes that they got tonight. Richardson with 26, Thybul with 30. So my recommendation here is if you picked up Thybul when Richardson was out, I think you should hold on. I think you should hold on and see what this looks like for him once this Sixers team is up to speed. Once Richardson's minutes limit is taken off, maybe even when Al Horford's in the lineup too, I want to see what this looks like. If he can get to mid-20s and he can hit a three or two a game, you throw that on top of his already sky-high steals rate, the blocks that he's able to get you, and the incredibly low turnovers, and he's a nine-cat guy. He's someone who is very interesting to me. He's a hold. Don't drop him because of the low scoring output. I mean, that's not why you have him. Very interesting stuff from Thybul. Moving on to the Celtics side of things, Kemba Walker, he was on fire in this first half, coming off of a crazy 44-point game the previous night. Kemba Walker was coming out shooting lasers in the first half. I think he had 19 or 20 points. Can't remember which one it was. He finishes his game, though, with 29 points. 8 assists on 8 of 21 shooting. The Sixers really honed in on him on the second half. They kept the ball out of his hands a lot. But, I mean, this guy is this team's engine. He looked fantastic. He's not the guy I'm most intrigued by, though. And Gordon Hayward is that guy. He is coming. This is his third game since returning from his broken hand. Last night, there were some concerns that he might have broken his nose. And I just saw the clip of it today. And as a guy who has a schnoz probably similar to Hayward's, it looked very uncomfortable the way that it was bending. It made me feel a little queasy. So very surprised he didn't break it. Pretty surprised he wasn't wearing a mask. And he was great. He looks really crisp. I think that he was really keeping up with his conditioning while he was out. And he's just, I mean, this game right here, it looks like he's just picked up right where he left off. He had 19 points on 8 of 16 shooting. 5 assists, 4 rebounds, a steal and a block, and 2 three-pointers. That's just great. 37 minutes, that was second highest on the team behind Jaylen Brown, who had 41. It's anyone's guess where he's going to end up, because I think that there could be a regression coming from him in terms of his field goal percentage. But outside that, I mean, he's clearly a different guy than he was last season. I mean, he's a player who's going to beat his ADP. He was a gamble in the mid rounds. He's one of those guys that has surpassed that, and he could be a top 40 guy. I'm very satisfied with what I've seen from him. It's really cool seeing Hayward play at sort of closer to that level he was in Utah. Not only just because, you know, you like rooting for a guy like him coming off of a devastating injury like that, but it makes this Boston Celtics team very interesting. I mean, they're good, man. Even though they lost this one. Jason Tatum, he had 15 points on 5 of 18 shooting, not his best night. 3 rebounds, 4 assists, and a block, 3 three-pointers. Interesting stuff going on with the centers here. Daniel Tice, who started this game, he had 16 points with 5 rebounds, an assist, and a block in 24 minutes. But the hero of the night was Enes Kanter, who played some big second-half minutes, big fourth-quarter minutes. He, in 24 minutes, finished with 20 points, 9 rebounds, 2 steals, 2 blocks on 10 of 13 shooting. Obviously, this is not something that's going to keep up. The only thing that I really take away from this is that the Celtics centers are really interesting when there's only 2 of them and not 3. Robert Williams is going to come back at some point. He's going to take anywhere between 12 to 17 minutes, officially making all of these guys just who even knows. 12 to 17 might be high. Well, I mean, but you never know. It's a three-man committee. Tice and Cantor split it literally down the middle tonight, 24 apiece. Yeah, so you're not making a move there. I mean, Cantor probably has the highest upside of these three guys, but I don't really foresee a scenario where he just starts playing high 20s with Tice and Williams behind him. So that does it for this game. Let's move on to our next one. Let's all take a moment of silence real quick for the 2019 to 2020 San Antonio Spurs, please. Okay. How low can you sink to lose an overtime game at home to Cleveland? A team that not even a week ago were having national articles published about how much they hate their college coach. Kevin Love trade rumors are very public, and he's clearly pissed off. But I'm going to circle back to that Kevin Love point because I have a tiny mini rant on that. We'll get to that real quick. But God, this Spurs – people were talking about how the Blazers were having a rough year. They're having a rough year because of injuries. The Spurs are having a rough year because they're bad. It's just sad days for the Popovich era. This is – yeah. Anyway, let's go to the Cleveland Cavaliers. The aforementioned Kevin Love had a really good ball game, 30 points on 11 of 24 shooting, 4 three-pointers, 17 rebounds, 2 assists, no defensive stats. This is a pretty stereotypical Kevin Love line if I've ever seen one. Colin Sexton held up the other side of the scoring load for this team. He had 28 points on 10 of 19 shooting, and in very Colin Sexton fashion, had 2 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, and that was it. So hope you like the points. Jordan Clarkson led the scoring charge off the bench for this team with 25 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal. He had 4 threes as well on 10 of 18 shooting. He continues to do what he does. Tristan Thompson had a low point in this game. He had 2 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, and a block on 1 of 5 shooting. He'll hope that he bounces back in his next couple of ones. Jetty Osman, he had a nice efficiency game. And over the last, I'll give him credit, over the last 2 to 3 weeks, he's been shooting the ball pretty well, which gives him something. He's not a guy I'm adding anywhere. I mean, maybe if you're like in need of, I don't know. He's just not, the fantasy game's not there for him. He had 15 points in this one on 6 of 12 shooting, 2 rebounds, an assist, a steal, and a block, and 3 three-pointers. That's all very serviceable, but it's just not what he will be. The guy that I think we were all keeping an eye on heading into this one was Kevin Porter Jr., who had a very crazy stat line in his last one. Let me take a look at what it was real quick. I remember it was 26 or 24 points. It was 24 points with 6 threes. There we go. In his last game, he had 24 points, 6 threes, and 3 steals. You know, he's been getting a lot more minutes recently, and everyone's just like, hey, this terrible team is starting to play their rookies. Maybe he's worth a look. And he had 16 minutes in this game, in an overtime game. He had 5 points, 2 of 6 shooting, 2 assists, 2 rebounds, and a steal, and a 3. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you I've watched a lot of Kevin Porter Jr. I think I saw maybe one game he's played this season. I'm not thrilled by his fantasy prospects. He strikes me as a Tim Hardaway Jr. type with the stat set. Only difference is that he's a rookie and he's in Cleveland. So there's not a lot to like there, personally. Yeah, he's got some upside, and there's definitely going to be a point where he's going to be playing, I think, consistent mid-20s minutes, but I don't really know what you're going to be getting out of that, frankly. I mean, I'm not going to knock him. He's definitely talented. It's just that the fantasy game is just not there. He's not my cup of tea, so I'm not reaching for him. And for those of you who did, well, maybe you should just move on to the next one. So let's press pause on here for one quick second, just because I want to address I've been seeing a lot of stuff about this Kevin Love situation from like a fantasy perspective. I'm not going to sit here and talk to you like I'm one of these people who are way smarter than me who have already discussed the lack of trade options that Cleveland has. I'm not going to, you know, get into the specifics of any of that. But from a fantasy perspective, I think it's important because Kevin Love is just not happy on this team. It was very clear. Just you could just see it through the numbers. These last two games of his have been really, really good. They've been good. but he's been phoning it in. I got to say, his six previous games, and granted, he was injured through some of these. Some of these, though, it also just looks like he just wasn't really doing much for you. I mean, he was the outside the top 270 over his last six games prior to these two. I think it's very clear based off of the reports that are coming out that he does not want to be in Cleveland. I mean, I've seen some stories out there saying that indicating that he was the player in Cleveland who called out Coach Beilein, I don't know, in that Athletic piece. I think it's very, who knows if that's the case, but it's also, I think, very apparent that he does not like playing with Colin Sexton and Darius Garland, two point guards who are not only trying to figure out the NBA, but trying to figure out how to pass a ball. Like they're trying to learn how to play with each other. I mean, look, you're Kevin Love and you went from getting passes from LeBron James in the NBA Finals to watching Colin Sexton dribble the ball out for 20 seconds and then just shooting up a prayer. He's not getting any help in Cleveland. He's not going anywhere in Cleveland. He's in Cleveland. Sorry, Cleveland listeners, but he's in Cleveland. And there's no reason for him to want to try. Even if he is on the trade market, he doesn't need to showcase anything. People know what Kevin Love can bring to a team. He just doesn't want to be there anymore. And I think that it's going to come into play in terms of fantasy. Like, you're just going to get games where he's totally off. It seems like a massive headache. The fact that there aren't logical destinations for him makes me a little afraid of how long this could go on for. This whole malcontent, get me out of here attitude. I mean, personally, after a big game like this and after a decent game that led before it, I might be trying to move off of him if I have him. Like, I have, you know, I don't think that that's out of the question. I think this is the time to strike. Maybe find yourself a top 50 to top 60 type of player. If you want to aim higher, go aim higher. I could top 40 is fine too. I'm not sure where the valuation really lands on it, but somewhere between that 40 to 60 range, just get them off your team. This is the time to do it if you want to do it, because I feel like the headaches are coming. This Cleveland team is just going to stay bad. The other part of this Kevin Love trade thing that I want to discuss, because I've also gotten a lot of questions on Twitter about this player, and I've also seen a lot of questions about him in the HoopBall fantasy forums. Just a great place, by the way. Just go to the forum tab on hoop-ball.com. A lot of it. Give fantasy advice. Receive fantasy advice. I'll be there. Maybe we could talk. It's a fun place. The guy that I'm talking about is Larry Nance Jr., a guy that people are interested in acquiring based off of the notion that Kevin Love will be on his way out. And thus, Larry Nance Jr. becomes this guy who will just rise to these starters' minutes and be like this crazy useful fantasy asset that you could buy for cheap right now. My issue with that is, so like right now he's outside the top 100, which is actually good for a reserve. Generally, if you have a reserve who's like around the top 100 and he were to move into starters minutes, that's a good sign that he could be like a top 70 to 60 kind of guy. Like, you know, you like seeing that, but it just all goes back to the fact that there is no trade that makes sense that's in place. There is no assurance that if Kevin Love is dealt, that Larry Nance Jr. is just going to have this runway. It makes sense, but we don't even know where Love could go. We don't know it could be coming back. The Cavs don't have a lot of options at their disposal. They might have to take on some power forwards. There's no guarantee for me here that if you just try and invest in Larry Nance now, that it can pay off because of all the uncertainty with the situation. And also the fact that all these owners who probably have him that you're trying to scoop him off of, they're probably thinking the same thing. This is a guy I should hold on to because of the potential value that he could have once Love is gone, which is just going to drive the price up to a point where I'm not willing to pay. Like, if I'm trying to trade for Larry Nance, I'm trading a guy outside the top 100. And I don't know if you can get him for a player in outside that top 100 right now. So, summation, you have Love. I'm trying to trade him. If you want Nance, you got to trade someone outside the top 100 for him. If not, I don't know if you can sustain the mixed bag of ball games that he'll provide you. For reference tonight, you know, he had 29 minutes, got 11 rebounds, which you love, but he did nothing else with them. He's just, you know, he's fringy right now. Potential's there, but he's fringy right now. Anyway, that's way more time than I wanted to speak about the Cavs. I guess that's just the pitfalls of doing this by yourself. No one can tell you, hey, man, stop talking about the Cavs. Let's just go to the Spurs, an equally depressing team, frankly, probably more so considering what we know about them. LaMarcus Aldridge, second game back from his two-game absence. He had a decent ball game with 18 points, 10 rebounds, 3 assists, and a block. Shot 6-16 from the floor. Not great. But you assume as long as he's playing, he's going to chug along at top 40, top 35 value. So you got to keep running him out there. DeMar DeRozan had 21 points on 8 of 17 shooting. Not great. With 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals. Really, the Spurs are, there's nothing to talk about with them, man. The only thing there is to talk about is this disgusting point guard battle that's going on between Derek White and DeJounte Murray. White won this one out. He had 32 minutes in this game, and he was good. He had 17 points with 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal. 7 of 9 shooting and 3 of 3 from the free throw line. That's all, and no turnovers. That's all really good stuff. Go ahead and do me a favor and take a look at his last 8 games. Just pull up his game log. And, I mean, that's just, it's really just on one, off one for him. These games are, he's not giving you consistent output over, like, you know, you mesh all of those averages together, those 8 games that he's played, including tonight's line, he's outside the top 200 in 9 cat leagues. You can do better. Talent's there, but it's just not happening right now. And DeJounte Murray, I mean, we heard like 4 or 5 days ago. Maybe it's actually sooner than that. Maybe it was like 2 to 3 days ago. We heard that his minutes restrictions were lifted. He was finally able to now see minutes in the 30s again, and he did that in his last ball game. But tonight he only saw 17 minutes. He had 6 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, and a block. I mean, it's all great for the time he played, but 17 minutes? You just sort of get the impression that Pop is just going to go with the guy who's playing the best. And not to mention that Patty Mills is in the fold here, mucking things up himself. He had 28 minutes in this ballgame with 10 points on 3-7 shooting. The answer on the Spurs point guards is that there is no answer. I don't trust any of them, and you shouldn't either. And that's all I have to say about that. Let's go now to Mexico City. This exhibition game between Luka Doncic and the Dallas Mavericks versus Avocado Adverse, Andre Drummond. He was, we'll get there. Anyway, Dallas side. Let's talk about the Mavs. Luka Doncic doing Luka Doncic things. 41 points, 12 rebounds, 11 assists on 14 of 24 shooting. He had 6 three-pointers, was 7 of 12 from the line, which, you know, the 5 missed free throws isn't that great, but you're going to take the 40-point triple-double and you'll be happy. Nothing else to say about that. Kristaps Porzingis, he had 20 points on 8 of 18 shooting, hit 8 rebounds, an assist, and 3 blocks. No three-pointers, but had he hit 1 or 2, that's a very nice-looking Kristaps Porzingis line. He's an interesting guy because I think we all anticipated there'd be more rigorous resting schedules for him because of the nature of his injury and the fact that he hasn't played in a year, but he's taken no time off. And like those concerns are pretty much, for me, they're kind of evaporated, which makes him a very intriguing trade candidate in my mind. Sort of a buy low. I don't know. The Mavericks are good. Like they're competitive good. They're right now angling themselves for a top 4 seed in the Western Conference, and I don't see any reason at this point why they're, I mean, they might start resting Porzingis down the stretch, but it looks like he's just going to be playing a lot of these games. So that's pretty cool. The big eye-popping line in this one is obviously Seth Curry off the bench. He's just exploded for 30 points on 11 of 15 shooting, 6 of 9 from three-point land, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals in 34 minutes a game. And that's all great, but D'Lon Wright is not playing. He is out. He was questionable heading into this one, and he was ruled out with, I want to say abductor, but it could be adductor. One of those two injuries. If it was, I'm going to say that he was out with an abductor injury. If I'm wrong and it is adductor, please feel free to reach out to me on Twitter and tell me how bad of a person I am. But yes, abductor injury for D'Lon Wright. He's going to come back. I mean, the worst thing in the world I can imagine is that D'Lon Wright loses his mid-20s role to Seth Curry, because I know what kind of fantasy player Wright could be. He's already got so much other stuff in the way to realizing that value. But I don't trust that Seth Curry is going to emerge in this rotation anytime soon. Put him on your watch list. no, not much else. And Tim Hardaway Jr. had one of his classic stinkers. Pretty sure this is coming off of his 29-point game where we reined in 9 3-pointers. It was, yep. So that's pretty much par of the course for the man. He had 2 points on 1 of 6 shooting with 5 rebounds, and that is it. He's a very difficult guy to own. Moving on to the Pistons, I mentioned at the top that Andre Drummond was very close to becoming the first player ever ruled out because avocado. He, you know, it's like kind of funny, but it's also really not funny. He had an allergic reaction to an avocado, had some swelling in his eye. It looked like he was able to get back out there, which I guess makes the story funny. Would not have been if it were anything serious. So it's nice to know that he's fine. He had 23 points with 15 rebounds, an assist, and 3 steals. He had a block, shot 10 of 14 from the floor and 3 of 6 from the line. That's Andre Drummond for you. Blake Griffin had, Blake Griffin scored 10 points on 3 of 16 shooting, 1 of 10 from 3-point range with 5 assists and 3 rebounds. He has been abysmal all year. You really hate to see it, but, I mean, Blake's just playing on fumes. If you have him, I'm sorry, because you can't really trade him. I'm not saying you should drop him, but you can't really play him like this. This is, I mean, yeesh. The bench guys for the Pistons were a little more interesting than the starters. Derrick Rose is doing Derrick Rose things. He had 19 points on 7 of 16 shooting, 5 of 10 from the 3, 4 assists and 2 steals. He's been playing fine over his last, you know, set of games. He's a great end-of-bench guy to give you points and assists if that's what you need. And he's just chugging along. Christian Wood, who is the fantasy darling of what could be, he had 10 points, 8 rebounds, and a block in 14 minutes. I mean, good God. If the Blake Griffin absence is coming, I don't know when, but there's going to be a point where he's gone, and Christian Wood is going to fly off the waiver wire once that happens. He is absolutely – well, okay, not – he's probably the epitome of a luxury stash right now. He's doing decent stuff with 14 minutes a game like this, but you can't trust that. You can't. You can't roll him out there. There's a good chance that he could pop for this team at some point, but we're not there yet. But he's very appealing. Hot watch list guy. If you're in a deep enough format, then you can go ahead and throw him on there. But yeah, so that's it for that last game. There's not really much else to talk about. This is a pretty standard one, so we're going to move on to our last game. But real quick, let me give you guys, I want to turn our attention to something that you all should be made aware of, and that's the Bruise Letter. Guys, Aaron Brewski, the founder of hoopball.com, he has a weekly newsletter that he has been doing since the very first week of the season. It's a tapestry of fantasy information. It's great stuff. I've been reading every single edition, and I feel enlightened from a fantasy perspective as a result. He's really, really good at this, guys, and all this stuff is totally free and totally exclusive to the newsletter. You cannot get this advice that he gives anywhere else. Take 10 seconds. You can go to hoop-ball.com/newsletter, throw in your email address, and you'll get the next edition Monday morning. Brewski, he touches on a topic in the NBA of interest to him. He spends the first portion doing that. He'll give you his patented Kings coverage if you want a deep dive on why Rashawn Holmes is the second coming. He will give you a little slice of life, some really, you know, nice pause from all fantasy stuff, really basketball stuff, really. Very cool stuff when you take a nice little break and get his thoughts on just, you know, life. It's nice. He had a piece about meditation, about being a new father. It's really good stuff. He's a great writer. And, of course, he does a blurb on all 30 teams in the league. What you get in the end is spectacular fantasy advice. Give it a look. hoop-ball.com/newsletter. Put your email address in 10 seconds and get some primo fantasy advice in your inbox this next Monday. All right. Our last game on the docket tonight, it is still going on, but it should be ending pretty soon. 124 left. The Denver Nuggets are leading the Blazers 110-99. They're going to win this one. So on the Blazers side of things, where Hassan Whiteside, he's just He's boggling the mind. I gotta say. I mean, he's completely. It's getting pretty convincing at this point that he is playing at an early round level, and the free throw percentage went from about as bad as it could get to not just good for his standards, but just good by any player's standards. He has 33 points in this game with 11 rebounds, 2 assists, and 4 blocks on 15 of 21 shooting. He hit a three-pointer. What the? He hit a three-pointer in this one, and he had no turnovers. I don't really have any advice on what you do with that, unless if you have him, just pat yourself on the back and keep riding it out because they need him. There was an interesting thing today about Yusuf Nurkic apparently plotting a return sometime around the All-Star break in February, which I gotta say I couldn't believe that when I read that because I was watching the game where he broke his leg last season. And I mean, we all talk about how devastating Gordon Hayward's injury was. I think this injury was like 5 times worse. That's insane to me that he could be coming back in February. He had that injury at the end of March. So, I mean, that's like we're talking about like a timeline that's less than a year. Everything I've read about it seemed to indicate that he was looking at a March return, so this suggests that he's ahead of schedule. There's no telling what kind of role he would step into. And I don't think you make any moves on Whiteside thinking about that coming in the future. I mean, if anything, the Blazers they just need anybody to come in. But I don't see Whiteside being threatened by Nurkic this season. I can't imagine that he can play himself up to a level worth competing after what happened to him and how long he's been gone. So interesting nugget there. I guess keep your eye on that. But I'm not sure if I buy it yet. Carmelo Anthony, he has 20 points in 37 minutes right now with 9 rebounds, 2 steals, 2 blocks, an assist, and 2 three-pointers. That's an insane nine cat line from a very nine cat, a non-nine cat kind of player. Melo is a points league player. He's the rejuvenation that he's experienced this season has been really cool. I'm a huge fan of it. I just don't really want him on my fantasy team. I mean, this is a great line though. You gotta give it to him. There's nothing I can really take apart there. But yeah, I'm not touching that. Damian Lillard in this one, he has 13 points on 5 of 16 shooting and 11 assists, 2 rebounds and a steal. He's gonna be fine, but he's not been playing all that great recently. Oh, let me just double check myself on that. Yeah, I mean, this is obviously not a great ball game. And yeah, actually, yeah, he's been fine recently, but he's kind of had some ups and downs since the back injury that he sustained a few weeks ago. You just keep writing that out. The guy of interest, really, with the Blazers, though, is Kent Bazemore, who's stepped into a starting role, a 30-minute-plus role, since Rodney Hood went down with his torn Achilles. And in this game, he had 9 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists on 3 of 7 shooting, but only had 1 three in no defensive stats. And that's not what you want. Bazemore's a really interesting guy to look at right now because I wrote about in my I do the pickup of the night columns on Sunday nights, and I wrote about him in that column, and I called him a must add in formats that you are punting field goal percentage because his shooting has been unavoidably terrible this season. It's really bad, and I don't feel like it's the sort of thing that gets better when you get more shots. Like Baze's shot just hasn't looked the same for the last 2 years. You really add him because of the 1-1-1 potential, 1-3, 1 steal, 1 block. And it's been a mixed bag for him so far. Like this first game, it's just really in none of the games that he's played since he stepped into the starting role, he has looked like the kind of guy that you would want on your team. But I can't help but feel that you need to have him because there's no one else at all. And you look at this, they had 4 guys play off the bench, the Blazers did in this game, which it just went final, by the way. Nuggets win 114 to 99. 4 guys off the bench. Scalabissier led them in minutes with 23, and he did nothing with them. Anfernee Simons had 22, and he's been kind of taking the other shots that Rodney Hood had that Baze hasn't been taking. You kind of have to have Baze on your team, but you kind of have to not start him until he starts actually doing things because he's burning holes in your percentages. And if he's not getting the defensive stats, which in theory he really should be when he's getting the sort of burn, then he's just not worth your time. But But you got to give him, I guess, a little bit of opportunity, a little bit more runway to prove that he does have it in him. You know, he looked washed towards the end of the last season. A lot of people thought that, you know, chalked it up to him being sort of like unmotivated and checked out of what Atlanta was doing. But honestly, I mean, I'm a Hawks fan. I saw a lot of those games. Bazemore was a very vocal and active teammate. The Hawks were actually good down the stretch, and like the team energy was pretty up. Bazemore might have been a little checked out because he's not competing for anything, but I don't really think that it was so much of him not wanting to play hard as it was that his shot's just not there. And this season has just been evidence to further that his shot's just sort of off. And without that, it's kind of hard for him to put his game together. So keep him on your team if you have him, but you know, we got to keep a close eye on him because it's not been pretty so far. And so let's move on to the Denver Nuggets thing to close out our night here. Paul Millsap and Jamal Murray came into this game listed as questionable. Jamal Murray with his trunk issue that he hurt in the last game, and Paul Millsap with a sore left foot. Both ended up playing, both ended up ruining two different streams that I had set up. I had Monte Morris to stream in one league and Jeremy Grant set up in another, and didn't work out. Jeremy Grant actually had a great game, but and Monte Morris did. Jeez. All right, but we'll get there. Nikola Jokic, let's start there with him because he's actually had a really nice stretch over the last week. You know, there's been tons of talk about how he's just so out of shape and he's not playing well. But in this game, he had 31 minutes, 7 of 14 shooting from the field en route to 20 points, 11 rebounds, and 6 assists, and 2 three-pointers. Since December 6th, guys, he's been playing at a second-round level. Jokic has always been a slow riser, and maybe this year is a little slower than most, but I am optimistic that he will get himself up into that sort of second-round echelon. The buy low window is closing. I'm not saying that all of his issues are behind him because it's clear when you just look at him that he still has to play himself into shape. But I think he's also taking some of that criticism to heart and he's playing harder. And I'm just saying that the window is going to start closing and people who own him are going to be a little more reluctant to give him up now that they're starting to see the guy that they are familiar with. So if you're interested in making that move, now's your time to do it. Elsewhere on the roster, Will Barton, 15 points, 11 rebounds, 4 assists, and a steal. 2 three-pointers, 6 of 12 shooting. Will Barton just doing Will Barton things. Just chugging along. Jamal Murray, who we mentioned was questionable coming into this one, he played fine. He had 12 points on 4 of 11 shooting. 2 three-pointers, 6 boards, 3 assists, and a steal. Paul Millsap, he only saw 16 minutes in this one with 6 points and 5 rebounds and a block. Because Jeremy Grant saw all the minutes, all the playing time. 31 minutes for Grant with 20 points, 5 rebounds, 2 steals, and 5 three-pointers. I've talked about Grant before as being this kind of guy that once he takes this role from Millsap, he's going to be a must-start guy on all formats. And we could be seeing the beginning of that. He's been trending up minutes-wise as of late. I'm not saying that you should make the speculative ad yet because what we've seen so far this season is Millsap is continuing to get his minutes. Maybe he didn't play as much as he could have tonight because that foot was still kind of nagging at him. But Grant is super appealing. He's super appealing. If you have a guy to cut that you don't care about, I don't have a problem with you taking Grant on because, again, if he gets to that starter's level that he saw last year, I mean, we know what he did with it. You know, I mean, he's a top 70 guy. This is an offense that really suits him, and he's hitting threes at a high rate this year. He's what we were hoping out of Bazemore with the three steal and block kind of line. So he's interesting. And Monte Morris also had a decent ball game, 11 points, 7 assists, 2 steals, and 4 of 8 shooting. I guess I shouldn't have benched him, but I did. And that is the womp womp sort of note that we will end this program on. Guys, thanks for sticking with me on this one. This was fun riding solo. This is the first time I've done a podcast by myself. So please, any feedback would be really greatly appreciated. You could follow me. You could find me on Twitter and follow me if you want at Alan Srochi, AlanSrochi. I love answering questions, love talking to all of you, and yeah, reach out to me for any reviews that you could have of what we saw here tonight. So that's the program, guys. Enjoy your Friday, your weekend, and we will catch you next week, hopefully with David back, recovered from his illness. Until then, have a great weekend.
This has been a Hoop Ball presentation.